The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Oh, it's Friday, everyone! Yay! And we're going to start today's show with today's funny is in honor of all the teachers out there, at least here in South Florida, school's out. Yes, the 2019 school term has officially ended. So courtesy of our friend Lauren Mayer, this one's for you.
It must be so great being a teacher. I mean, you get all those vacations and holidays during the year and the whole summer off. You know, I wouldn't mind dealing with a bunch of kids in return for a 3 months paid vacation every year. I wish I didn't have to work this summer. You teachers have it so easy.
Summer's coming, finally here. Things are humming at the end of the year. Though since teachers' paychecks aren't big, a lot of us work a summer gig. So please stop these comments you make. You're so lucky with your summer break. Oh well, oh well, oh well, it's not really that much time off. And you see, teachers need this time for recovery. Tests and standards, so much to do. We work long hours and weekends too. Planning lessons, buying supplies, out of our own pockets, you guys. Don't know how much more I can take if you're so lucky with your summer break. Whoa, whoa. If you think it's so easy, you'd learn pretty fast. Watch 30 kids by yourself, see how long you can last. Not just vacation when kids aren't in class. Continuing education, units to pass. New curriculum day out of the time. The shopping for our rooms, thank you Amazon Prime. So please stop this annoying mistake. Teachers don't get 3 months summer break. Whoa, whoa, whoa. When the kids have been home for a week, I'm afraid that's when parents realize teachers are underpaid. Before it's colder, we're planning for fall. Like I told you, not a long break at all. And we need some summertime ease so we can pee whenever we please. So believe, for goodness sake, teachers need our summer break.
And we could use more, we could use more.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, good work, Lauren Mayer, saluting our teachers, who definitely deserve a hell of a lot more than we give them. That salute, Lauren Mayer's comedy. That's her new video for this week. And I played it today because, again, here in Florida, school ended this week. This morning I had a doctor's appointment and I drove past one of the local high schools, and I'm thinking, you know, not thinking of what time of year it was or anything because my kid's not in school anymore. And there were no cars in the parking lot. I'm thinking, that's weird. Why is there nobody there today? Duh, school ended this week. So there you go. I know my sister will appreciate that as well. And there's another reason why I played that very funny to open today's show, because we're going to talk a little bit about education in sort of a roundabout way. What we're going to be talking about a little later this hour is the intractable nature of our political alliances. I have a friend, you know, a friendly acquaintance, somebody I've known for many years. He's a musician, somebody whose music I used to play on the radio, and we became friends. And he was always a big Bernie Sanders supporter. Well, a couple of months ago, he was just tweeting and Facebooking and just all over the place, really up in arms over Bernie Sanders, because Bernie didn't give a good enough answer for him on the subject of reparations. Now, reparations is one of those subjects that I'll admit I'm not as up to speed on as perhaps I should be. So I want to learn. So I've put out some calls, and hopefully I know the person I really want to talk to about it, and hopefully he'll join us sometime in the next few weeks. And it's a subject that I will learn about. But this guy just went ballistic on Bernie Sanders, and if he won't say reparations are needed and necessary, I have to stand with my two daughters. My friend is a white man; he's married to an African American woman, and their children are mixed race. And so, okay, fine, if that's how you feel about it. Well, now, today, I noticed he posted this smear piece that's going around on Elizabeth Warren. And actually, our guest today is a journalist. He's somebody that I met about 10 years ago when he was an activist. And I sort of jumped onto the same activist platform as he did. And we spoke on the air a number of times. Again, I've been doing this show for many, many years. So Carl Gibson these days has sort of pivoted into journalism. And these days he writes for a fairly new news website called gritpost.com. And one of the articles I read of his was really good, and I think it's not getting enough attention, so I wanted to have him on to talk about this. It has to do with Joe Biden. But then as I'm reading the other articles he's written at this website, I see this article sort of amplifying this hit job on Elizabeth Warren, and it pissed me off. So we'll talk to him about it. But then I see my old friend, my old musician friend, I'm not going to name names, but I saw him post something on Twitter about the, you know, with the same smear story about Elizabeth Warren. And I confronted him on it because that's what I do. In case you haven't met me yet, I'm Nicole Sandler, and I'm pretty damn blunt. And if I disagree with you on something, I will challenge you about it. I will ask you questions, and yeah, chances are we may have a few words about it. We may even have an educated disagreement on it. And if you're an asshole, it'll turn into an argument. And yes, I can be an asshole too. I fully own it. But anyway, so this guy, someone's asking who did this now. He's an old friendly acquaintance of mine, a musician from Los Angeles. I'm not going to name names because you wouldn't know who he is anyway. He's not a big name. But now he's smearing Elizabeth Warren over this fake story. I would call it fake news, but sorry, it's a term that's been perverted. So anyway, I called him out on it, and he, you know, I said something to the effect of, I think you should stick to music, because you obviously don't know what you're talking about here. And then he wrote me back and said something. I wish I had screenshotted it or something before I blocked him, but I blocked him, so I can't see his tweets anymore. But he called me some kind of a neoliberal who's being owned by the whoever's. And it's like, yeah, call me a neoliberal again and I'll block you. You know what? I won't even wait. Because it descended from there. But this is the kind of shit already people are digging in. And so these two stories are things I want to discuss today, and we'll get to them. One, again, about Elizabeth Warren and her record on education. And Elizabeth Warren is very, very clear where she is on post-secondary education. Now, who did the original story? The original story. Oh, well, I'll fill you in on it as we go along. It'll unfold throughout the course of the program today, I promise, because we're going to get to it. So stick around, be patient, take a hit or whatever. It's Friday, and enjoy. So we'll get to that. But before we get to any of that, I guess we can start with the news. It's Friday, so what the hell? We'll do it live.
We'll do it live. Okay. Fucking thing.
We'll do it live.
We'll do it live. Fuck it. I'll write it and we'll do it live.
Yeah, I read it already. Okay, so the news begins with the clock ticking, tick-tock, tick-tock, on the Mexico tariff time bomb. Officials from both the United States and Mexico negotiated last night into the evening with no deal being reached. Talks resumed today. Trump threatened, by way of background, to impose a 5% tariff on Mexican imports starting Monday if Mexico doesn't do more to stem the tide of Central American migrants that end up on the southern border. And then every month, if they still don't stop these people from coming here, Donald Trump will increase the tariff by another 5%, working up to a 25% tariff in place against Mexico by, I believe, October. Lovely, right? Now, in order for this allegedly not to happen, in order for the tariff deal to be called off, Trump would have to sign an executive order today. Now, he is on Air Force One, sadly, heading back to the U.S. from the Trump's European vacation, when he tweeted, quote, "If we are able to make the deal with Mexico, and there is a good chance that we will, they will begin purchasing farm and agricultural products at a very high levels starting immediately. If we are unable to make the deal, Mexico will begin paying tariffs at the 5% level on Monday." Yeah, so the idiot tweeted that from Air Force One. Let me remind him, Mexico won't be paying the additional 5%. We, the U.S. consumers, will be paying it. Just in case you're wondering about that. All right. So this is one of the jumping off points on what we're going to talk about later. Joe Biden. I'm sorry. Uncle Joe's got some problems here. So one day, just one day after Joe Biden and his campaign reaffirmed his support of the controversial Hyde Amendment that bars federal funds from being used for abortions and enduring criticism from opponents and the public alike, Joe Biden flipped. Yeah, see, it was just Wednesday when Cedric Richmond, who's the co-chair of the Biden campaign, went on CNN and said about Biden's continuing support of the Hyde Amendment, quote, "Joe's a deeply religious man. He's guided by his faith. His position on the Hyde Amendment has been consistent," end quote. And then yesterday, again, he flipped. Reading from a piece of paper rather than the teleprompter that had the rest of this speech that he was about to deliver, Biden proclaimed,
"I can't justify leaving millions of women without access to the care they need and the ability to exercise their constitutionally protected right. If I believe health care is a right, as I do, I can no longer support an amendment that makes that right dependent on someone's zip code."
Okay, so I looked up that statement in the dictionary. And next to that statement from Joe Biden, it said pandering. Really, Joe, this is your deep-seated religious belief, but you take 24 hours of criticism and you totally change your mind? That'll fare well in a general election or not. Biden now joins with every other one of the 24 or so Democratic presidential candidates who are against the Hyde Amendment. More on this in a bit. Hearing is really believing. We already had read a transcript of a voicemail that Trump's former personal attorney, John Dowd, left for Michael Flynn's attorney. Hey, an edited version of it even appears in the Mueller report. But for the first time, a judge ordered the release of the audio tape. In it, Dowd demanded a heads up about what Flynn was telling Mueller. And it surely sounded like he was dangling a pardon when he mentioned Trump's feelings towards Flynn.
This is John again. Maybe I'm sympathetic. I understand your situation, but let me see if I can.
Sounds like he's been drinking.
State it in
just
stronger
saying.
Terms. If you
just
have,
an observation.
It wouldn't surprise me if you've gone on to make a deal with, and work with the government.
What?
I understand that you can't join a joint defense. That's one thing. If, on the other hand, there's information that implicates the president, then we've got a national security issue, or maybe a national security issue, I don't know. Some issue we've got, we've got to deal with, not only for the president, but for the country. So, then we need some kind of heads up.
We need some kind of heads up.
Just for the sake of protecting all interests if we can.
Oh, my God.
Without you having to give up any confidential information.
Wow. Can you imagine your lawyer leaving this message?
And if it's the former, then, remember what we've always said about the president and his feelings toward Flynn.
His feelings toward Flynn.
No, that still remains.
Okay, that's enough. Oh, my God. First of all, really? Stay tuned. All right. In other news, we couldn't escape it. And after all, yesterday was the 75th anniversary of D-Day. And Donald Trump participated in the official ceremonies. And according to the world media, he didn't fuck up. He stuck to the script. He read it as written. And he didn't embarrass himself or us in the process. In those, 30 minutes of the actual ceremony. But leading up to it and immediately after it and every other moment that he's been away on this trip, he has embarrassed both him and us on the world stage. So right before the ceremony was supposed to start, with the graves of thousands of U.S. troops who sacrificed their lives in World War II right behind him, Donald Trump sat for an interview with Fox News' Laura Ingraham. I know she pronounces it Ingram, but it's spelled Ingraham. And since I've never actually heard her say her name, I'll pronounce it the way it's spelled. Laura Ingraham. And he tore into Nancy Pelosi, calling her a nasty, vindictive, horrible person. This because Nancy Pelosi was reported to have told Democrats pushing for impeachment that she would prefer to see Trump thrown in jail. So, again, with a cemetery at the site of the Normandy landings over his shoulder, Trump hit back in an interview with Fox News against Nancy Pelosi.
I think she's a disgrace. I actually don't think she's a talented person. I've tried to be nice to her because I would have liked to have gotten some deals done. She's incapable of doing deals. She's a nasty, vindictive, horrible person. The Mueller report came out. It was a disaster for them.
Oh, God. He loved it when he thought it vindicated him, when he thought it exonerated him, because he doesn't read. So obviously he never read the report, so he doesn't know what's in it. But when he thought it cleared him, he loved it. He was, Mueller did a great job, and now it's, trash. Anyway, the wind blows. Okay, sorry. You're probably aware that June is LGBT Pride Month. It's to commemorate the events that happened 50 years ago this month. On June 28th, 1969, historic protests began at Manhattan's Stonewall Inn after police raided the bar that was a gathering place for the gay community. Police claimed it was because the bar was violating liquor laws, but police action targeting the community was a common tactic at the time. Rather than go quietly, the patrons fought back, and for days, hundreds of people rioted outside the bar, with many being arrested or injured. So those protests at Stonewall gave birth to the LGBTQ movement. I did a segment on this a week or two ago, and obviously there was activism long before Stonewall, but this sort of made it into a, you know, an actual movement where things started moving fairly relatively quickly. Anyway, not only did the Stonewall protests give rise to influential LGBTQ rights groups, but the first anniversary of the riots was marked with parades in New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Chicago. There were celebrations which became what is now known as International Pride Month. Well, yesterday, and this is big, this is a big deal, this is why I'm taking so long to set up this story. Yesterday, after the organization responsible for New York City Pride said it had voted unanimously to demand an apology, the commissioner of the New York City Police Department, James O'Neill, did just that.
I think it would be irresponsible of me as we go through World Pride Month not to speak of the events at the Stonewall Inn in June of 1969. Well, I'm certainly not going to stand up here and pretend to be an expert on what happened at Stonewall. I do know what happened should not have happened. The actions taken by the NYPD were wrong, plain and simple. The actions and the laws were discriminatory and oppressive, and for that, I apologize.
Wow. Again, big deal.
To the LGBTQ community that this would never happen in NYPD 2019.
Good for him. Good for him. Oh, well, an important part of the American music and the New Orleans music scene is Dr. John. The six-time Grammy winner and Rock and Roll Hall of Fame member died of a heart attack yesterday at the age of 77. Malcolm John Rebeneck Jr. was a New Orleans native, and his music was just as vibrant as his hometown. He started out as a songwriter and guitarist. He played with Aretha Franklin and the Stones. But it must have been a wrong this was his biggest hit. I said the right thing, but it must have used the wrong line. Ah, we know it well. I've been on the right trail, but it must have used the wrong call. Hit us in a bad place. Okay, so rest in peace, Dr. John. I got to see Dr. John once, and it was I was a youngin. It was in the early 80s. I think I had just graduated college. Yes, hats off to the Night Tripper. My boyfriend at the time lived in New York, so we were in New York visiting and going to see lots of shows, and we went to see Dr. John in this little club. I want to say it was the Bitter End, but I'm not sure. I believe it was on Bleecker Street in the Village. And we walked in and they sat us at a table, literally at the foot of the stage. And my hand was resting on the stage right next to Dr. John's foot as it leaned on the piano pedal. It was awesomeness. The only time I've ever seen him, never got to meet him, never even said hello. But Dr. John, you know, the great thing about a musician is at least their music lives on. All right. So let me, I don't even know how to get into this. I should share a couple of things. Somebody in the chat room, in the YouTube chat room, just said something about, where is it? Now I lost it. I lost it again. No, institution, so awesome. On the cops, that's good. On the cover of the Rolling Stone was not his best, just saying. That was sort of an anomaly. Anyway, somebody brought up the fact that Donald Trump, while he was there at Normandy, actually it was before, I guess it was Wednesday night, or right before he left England, he sat and did an interview with Piers Morgan. Played a little bit of it yesterday, I think. But this is the new clip that I heard yesterday sometime. He was headed to commemorate D-Day and the valor of these thousands of Americans who gave their lives to defend our freedom. And then Piers Morgan, because he's a friend of Donald Trump's, didn't want to push him too hard. So he sort of asked him in a softball way about why he didn't serve in Vietnam. And his answer was an insult, I think, to anyone who has ever served and every citizen of this country.
Well, I was never a fan of that war. I'll be honest with you. I thought it was a terrible war. I thought
Thank
it was
you,
very
Sean.
Far away. Nobody ever, you know, you're talking about Vietnam, and at that time, nobody ever heard of the country. This isn't like I'm fighting against Nazi Germany. We're fighting against Hitler. And I was like a lot of people. Now, I wasn't out in the streets marching. I wasn't saying, you know, I'm going to move to Canada, which a lot of people did. But no, I was not a fan of that war. That war was not something.
Would you like to serve generally, perhaps in another?
I would not have minded that at all.
Oh,
I would have been
honored,
but I think I make up for it right now. I look, $700 billion I gave last year.
You didn't give anything.
$716
That's our money, not your money.
You
vapid piece of shit. You draft dodging, bullshitting piece of human excrement. He gave $700 billion. No, you didn't give anything. And he didn't give a second of your time. And you would not have loved to serve. You're a fucking liar and a draft dodger. Do I make myself clear? God, it's not my birthday. By the way, to the comment of the person who said, made the cover of the Rolling Stone statement about Dr. John. It was Dr. Hook. Thank you, Sean Smith, for pointing it out. I knew that wasn't right. That's not Dr. John. Anyway, yes, fuck that guy. Okay, so I could go on and on about Trump, but I'm not going to. Instead, I want to go on a little bit about Joe Biden. Really, the reason, and our guest is coming up again. His name his name is Carl Gibson, and he writes for a new website called gritpost.com. And I had actually read a piece that he wrote last week. Let me try to pull it up. Okay. And the headline on this piece was Biden lied about marching with civil rights movement, claimed it had no policy agenda. And I had heard about this story. You know, a few days ago, I had heard about it, and I had wondered why it wasn't getting any more play in the media. And so I was happy to see that Carl Gibson wrote this story about it. And then a guy named Brett Banditelli found audio of Joe Biden, from 1988, during one of his prior presidential runs, when Joe Biden was claiming that he marched for civil rights back in the day, and his staff was trying to get him to stop lying because he never did. Here's just that little bit of Joe Biden back in 1988.
When I marched in the civil rights movement, I marched with tens of thousands of others to change attitudes.
No, you didn't. That's the thing. He did not. Let me see if I can't find. Okay. So I'm going to read from Carl Gibson's piece at gritpost.com. And he said, the headline reads, Biden lied about marching with civil rights movement, claimed it had no policy agenda. Here's a little bit from that article. This the article was drawn from a New York Times article last week. It's a series actually called The Long Run, which delves into the records of the 2020 Democratic candidates. And it featured Biden's, what I'll call, the big lie early on. All right, this is from Carl's article. He writes, in the first three paragraphs, the Times' Matt Flegenheimer noted how staffers for Biden's unsuccessful 1988 campaign tried to get their candidate to stop lying about being in civil rights marches. Biden also suggested the movement didn't do marches, quote, with a 12-point program, but simply to, quote, change attitudes, quote. Here's what he said. This was in 1987, speaking before an audience in New Hampshire. Quote, here's Joe Biden. When I marched in the civil rights movement, I did not march with a 12-point program. I marched with tens of thousands of others to change attitudes. And we changed attitudes. The only problem is he's lying. More than once, going back to the article, advisors had gently reminded Mr. Biden of the problem with this formulation. He had not actually marched during the civil rights movement. And more than once, Mr. Biden assured them he understood, and he kept telling the story anyway.
When I marched in the civil rights movement, I marched with tens of thousands of others to change attitudes.
Yeah, that's not how this works. And I'll tell you something. When one of, I won't say one of our biggest complaints against the current resident of the Oval Office is his propensity for lying. He lies about everything. The last thing we need is somebody else who's a pathological liar. And apparently Joe Biden is one. Now, here's what gets me about this story. This has been well documented. Joe Biden lied about this in two, or was it three, presidential campaigns that he ran in. And, you know, I keep reading about how Joe Biden, so much of his the numbers of him leading in the polls comes from his strength in the African-American community. Even our friend, my friend Tripp, who's usually in the NicoleSandler.com chat room, is Tripp in there today? Let me see. I've been in the other one. There's Tripp. Tripp. See, I don't understand this. So Tripp is in the chat room. Let me ask Tripp. That was 87, yes. He also did it in the 90s when he ran for president. This is a line that he has repeated through the years. And again, let me repeat this this line here from the article. More than once, advisors had gently reminded Mr. Biden of the problem with this formulation. He had not actually marched during the civil rights movement. And more than once, Mr. Biden assured them he understood, and he kept telling the story anyway. Yes, I mean, after they smeared Bernie Sanders for daring to tell the story that he did march with Dr. King, for that he's poo-pooed and being told, yeah, what have you done for me lately? And yet, here you have Joe Biden lying about marching where Bernie Sanders actually did. And he's getting a pass? This is what I don't understand. It's a disconnect. And with that, let me bring in our guest, as I mentioned earlier, Carl Gibson. Hold on. My mouse is not working. Computers, you know, you can't live with them. You can't live without them. All right. So Carl Gibson is a contributor at gritpost.com. He's written at a number of publications you've recognized. Hey, Carl, you there?
I'm here, Nicole. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks.
I'm Neil Horingic, yeah.
Thanks for being here. And you know, it's funny because I saw your name. I've been reading you over at Grit Post for a while now, and I kept thinking, I wonder if this is the same Carl Gibson. Because it was about 10, maybe 11 or 12 years ago even, there was a Carl Gibson down here in South Florida. I think you were in Florida, or maybe not, who picked up on something that was big over in the UK. It was called UK Uncut. And this Carl Gibson decided to start up a US Uncut movement. And it was basically to get corporations out of our public discourse, if I remember it correctly. And I tried to do a Florida US Uncut. That was you. You're that Carl Gibson, aren't you?
That is me. And that was originally in Mississippi, but as you mentioned, the kind of went all over the country. And of course, Occupy Wall Street happened. And so all of the uncut people kind of transitioned into that movement. Mm-hmm. And then from there, of course, Black Lives Matter, the Free College movement, the Medicare for All movement. So uncut people are still active in all kinds of movements today.
Wow. Yes, yes. But so that UK Uncut and then the subsequent US Uncut that grew out of it predated Occupy Wall Street and Black Lives Matter and all this. But we were trying to find footing, do something to call out, you know, the stuff that Bernie Sanders has been screaming about, how, you know, corporations and Elizabeth Warren has been screaming about, corporations are getting all the breaks and the average person is, you know, getting screwed. So from there, you went on to practice journalism. You've written for Salon and I don't have the list in front of me, but a nice long, a long list of publications that we know and love. And these days you find yourself at GritPost. Now, is this a new site?
So GritPost, and thanks for the intro, Nicole. I really appreciate it. GritPost launched in July of 2017. So it's coming up on its two-year anniversary now, still going strong. Just to give your listeners a little background, if they've never read us before, we've been certified as trustworthy by a team of veteran journalists with the group NewsGuard. Not sure if your listeners are familiar with that. We've been given multiple true ratings on content evaluated by Snopes and have been rated high in factual reporting by Media Bias Fact Check. So we might be new, but, you know, we've been certified as trustworthy and our reporting has been cited by more than 40 prominent local and national media outlets across the country. Everyone from Washington Post to the Houston Chronicle to USA to name a few.
Okay, good. So then let's start with an article of yours that first grabbed my attention yesterday. And I said, you know, I got to call Carl, find out if he's the same Carl, and invite him on the show to talk about this. And it was the story I was just mentioning, I don't know if you heard, about the headline reads, Biden lied about marching with civil rights movement, claimed it had no policy agenda. First of all, you wrote this story back the beginning of the week, Monday. I'm surprised that this hasn't gotten more play. I'm really surprised that this hasn't been picked up everywhere, because this is a big deal.
Yeah, and just like you mentioned prior to my segment, you know, the New York Times did talk about it in their piece, The Long Run.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how many people read the original New York Times piece, but the New York Times just kind of mentioned in passing in the first paragraph that Biden, as you said, said that he marched in the civil rights movement, when his advisors reminded him that he actually had not.
Wow.
And in addition, he said, you know, we didn't march with a 12-point plan. We marched to change attitudes, and we changed attitudes. Aside from the fact that Biden never marched in the civil rights movement,
right.
He's incorrect in his assessment that the civil rights movement didn't have a 12-point plan, as he called it. And of course, another Washington Post writer said, you know, it's really ignorant for Biden to say or to even insinuate that the civil rights movement didn't have a policy agenda. Obviously it did. And I think what's most important to mention is, and I mentioned this in my article, and I think the New York Times article mentioned this, like, again, in passing, mm-hmm. but it was more just kind of the missteps and failures of the 1987 campaign. But as a senator, and I mentioned this in my article, as a senator from Delaware, Biden was actually opposed to some of the direct policy platforms of the civil rights movement, namely school integration via busing. And you
wow.
know, and that's mentioned pretty, pretty thoroughly in my article there. So Biden was actually an enemy of the civil rights movement from a policy perspective during his time in the Senate. And to my knowledge, he has yet to apologize for that.
Wow.
Of course, if he does, then you know we'll talk about that. But I've yet to see any apology from the Biden camp.
You know, and I'm waiting for a Joe Biden town hall where people can ask these questions, or I guess we'll have to wait for the debates, and hopefully, you know, with 20 people or so spread out over two nights, I don't know how much airtime each of them is going to get. But you have another quote of Biden in this article that's disturbing. And earlier in the program, I was recounting the story of that I had to block somebody who was an old friend because of his smears against Elizabeth Warren. And then he decided to call me a neoliberal. And this after he had just berated Bernie Sanders, who he had earlier professed to love, because Bernie wasn't strong enough on reparations for him. You know, I'd love to hear Joe Biden ask the question about reparations, because here's a quote that you wrote. Again, this is from 1987. But still, this is how he feels. Quote, I do not buy the concept popular in the 60s, which said we have suppressed the black man for 300 years and the white man is now far ahead in the race for everything our society offers. In order to even the score, we must now give the black man a head start or even hold the white man back to even the race. I don't buy that, Biden said at the time. I don't feel responsible for the sins of my father and grandfather. I feel responsible for what the situation is today, for the sins of my own generation, and I'll be damned if I feel responsible to pay for what happened 300 years ago. Has he made any comments recently about reparations or about this attitude that he held a few decades ago?
Yeah, and I've looked high and low for any comments from the Biden camp regarding what he said in that interview in 1987. And again, I would assume the counter argument would be, well, you know, that was 32 years ago. He's since evolved. He was the vice president for President Obama, who was the first African-American president. But to this day, I haven't seen anything from Biden about reparations. Like you said, I hope a town hall happens or that he's asked directly in the debates. But here's the most important point. Like you said earlier, reparations has, and in my opinion, rightly so, become a litmus test for 2020 Democratic candidates. I mean, mm-hmm. everyone from Bernie Sanders to Elizabeth Warren to Julian Castro has made a statement about reparations. And I haven't seen Biden be forced to be held to that same standard. Now, again, I hope that something is asked in the future. And I think that interview, that initial interview in 1987, it's important to note, of course, that was from Ryan Grimm. He has a book mm-hmm. called We've Got Ingram is the Intercept DC
bureau. He was here with us last Friday.
Yeah, he found from Biden in 1987. And he pointed out that Biden was trying to set himself apart as a Democrat who wanted to speak to white voters who were angry about the gains that African Americans had made in the 70s. So he's actively, I don't know if you want to call it race baiting, but he's certainly playing to racist tendencies. And I would love to see him be asked about that.
Yeah. And especially as I'm reading, you know, that he's the one drawing a lot of support from the African American community. And I wonder why, in light of that, the media is not raising this issue. Which, you know, came from the New York Times. I say it's because the corporate mainstream media, MSNBC, wants Joe Biden. He's the Comcast candidate. So, you know, they put their finger on the scale there. All right. So that was a story. And I was wondering about why the hell this wasn't getting any play in the media. And then.
Well, and you made a great point, Nicole.
Yeah.
Just to add to what you were saying, Biden's first fundraiser, actually, when he was in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, he was not only put a lawyer for a law firm that advertises its union busting services on the top bill of his initial fundraiser in Philadelphia, but he also had the executive vice president of Comcast, and who I believe is Comcast's chief lobbyist, at the same fundraiser. And so when you look at, and I'm glad you made that connection, when you look at the friendliness that the media outlets that Comcast owns has towards Biden and Biden's campaign, it kind of becomes a little more clear when you follow the money. I mean, there's absolutely favoritism going on, or at least some questionable behavior on behalf of certain networks.
Right. And while other candidates are saying no thanks, but no thanks to these big money corporate contributions, Joe Biden had his first fundraiser, exactly one of those big money corporate contributors, and it was a Comcast fundraiser. So, you know, I just think all this needs to be out in the open. So while I was glad to see you wrote that story, I'm further going around and I'm reading. I come across another story that you wrote. And this one, you know, I had a different reaction to, Carl. The headline reads, Elizabeth Warren has yet to apologize for her pro-charter school history. And I'm thinking, I don't recall Elizabeth Warren having a pro-charter school history. And so I scroll down and I read the story, and I see this story draws heavily from a tweet storm from a woman who, the best I can tell, lives in Australia and hosts a podcast and did a tweet storm alleging that last Friday, Elizabeth Warren was introduced at a rally in Oakland, California, by a charter school lobbyist named Sonia Mehta. And this tweet storm went on to just really smear Elizabeth Warren on the subject of charter schools. It's blatantly false. Sonia Mehta was not a lobbyist. She was a teacher at the school. After she worked there, it became a charter school. It was her job. She worked there. She was never a lobbyist. And a lot of the other allegations that this Amy Teresa made in her Twitter storm 2 days ago, it's just false. I'm just curious as to why. Did you find her pro-charter school history? Because I looked for it and could not find it.
Yeah, so that initial tweet storm, she cited other sources that I then looked into. Usually when I write something, I like to have at least two credible sources confirmed before I write anything.
Right.
I think accuracy is very important.
It is.
And again, and just like you mentioned, Sonia Mehta, someone had posted the Rebecca Solnit article to the Grit Post Facebook page yesterday. And I think Solnit did that interview with Mehta yesterday. And she distanced herself from the charter school label, said, you know, she had helped actually unionize the school that she worked at.
Right.
She supported the teacher strikes in California and Oakland especially. And so, you know, I think my editor had actually included a note at the top of the article just pointing out that Sonia Mehta distanced herself from that charter school lobbyist label.
It's not
since referred to as a local education figure. But
it is not. Hold on. If your editor, it's there now.
Ahead.
It was just added at noon today. So this is the first I'm seeing it because I had this open on my computer since yesterday. All right. So it is there.
But yeah, and of course, at Grit Post, we do care about accuracy. So whenever anything in our story has changed, we like to put an editor's note right at the top of the article just so everyone's completely crystal clear.
Uh-huh.
The facts are important. But I also wanted to mention, I didn't see in Rebecca Solnit's piece, and correct me if I'm wrong, I didn't see Rebecca Solnit say anything about the fact that Josh Delaney Elizabeth Warren's senior education policy advisor, according to his LinkedIn profile, also worked as a teacher at Teach for America. And I'm not sure how familiar your listeners are with Teach for America, but in my Elizabeth Warren piece, I linked to a Salon article that was written by a guy named Chad Summer, who was a Teach for America veteran educator himself.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was there, he noticed that Teach for America pushed what he called a pro-corporate anti-union agenda. And in fact, Teach for America was found to have worked directly with Rahm Emanuel and a bunch of for-profit charter school operators to not only shutter approximately 50 public schools in Chicago and open approximately 50 for-profit non-union charter schools. And
wow.
Teach for America was kind of integral to that whole process. You know, Elizabeth Warren is great. And at Grit Post, just to make sure your listeners are clear, we've actually given her really favorable coverage about her wealth tax on net worth in excess of $50 million. About her plan to jail bankers and CEOs whose companies break the law. And that story actually got over 100,000 shares on GritPost. So you're
good.
Listening.
No,
that.
I'm glad to hear it. But I understand and I, believe me, have calls out and I'm looking into this Josh Delaney guy and why he is Elizabeth Warren's senior education policy advisor. That's troubling. And I'm looking into it. I'm actually, you know, I've got calls into her campaign. I don't expect that I'll be getting an interview with Elizabeth Warren anytime soon. But I did ask for a surrogate, somebody who can speak for her and the campaign and answer questions that I have on a few issues. This is one of those issues. However, the fact that her education policy person is troubling is questionable, does not equate to her pro-charter school history. She does not have a pro-charter school history.
I would disagree with that. If you look at her book, The Two Income Trap, in 2003, which she authored with her daughter, there is a section of that book, and I cited a HuffPost article that also mentioned that excerpt, where she says, I don't have the quote in front of me, but she says basically that she would love to see a all-voucher or all-school choice, which is language that the charter movement uses, an all-school choice system. And she says, while it might be a shock to the system, it could be exactly what this country needs. Now, to her credit, and we did mention this in our article, in 2016, Warren declined to support question two on the Massachusetts ballot,
mm-hmm.
Which was basically a pro-charter school initiative, although she did praise charter schools in that very same statement that she gave, declining to support that particular ballot question. And I have yet to see Warren walk back those comments that she made in 2003 in her book, The Two Income Trap. And if she does, obviously we'll talk about it.
Okay.
And I would be interested, Nicole, if you got an interview with the Warren camp to not only ask about Josh Delaney and his role in advising the senator on her education policy, but also if she regrets calling for an all-school choice or all-voucher
absolutely.
Program in her book.
That is absolutely a question I will ask because this is a really important subject. I just have a problem with, and I'm glad you're presenting all sides. Whoever this Amy Therese woman is obviously had no such goal in mind. All she wanted to do was smear Elizabeth Warren with false facts. And at a time when we're dealing with an idiot in the Oval Office who just trades in false facts, he makes shit up as he goes along. I think we need to be extra careful to make sure we double check and triple check sources and make sure we're saying what we really mean. To call Elizabeth Warren pro-charter, I get that was in that book. It's not what her actions show. And I believe she needs to be questioned about it.
And again, her campaign is early, and the 2020 race is early, and the debates are happening soon. And I'm very excited about the debates because I think we'll get a much clearer of where the candidates stand in terms of their actual policy vision.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, these are important questions that need to be asked. You know, and obviously, I wouldn't just rely on a Twitter podcast host. And, of course, as you know, Nicole, podcast hosts can be reliable sources. But, again, I like to double-check and triple-check all sources before I would
– absolutely. And, look, I'm not one
– facts are important.
I'm not one to diss a podcast host, believe me, although I think I'm more than a podcast host. I went looking at her – you know, her Twitter stream to find out who this woman is. And as far as I can tell, she lives in Sydney, Australia. At least she says she does. She's a post-grad, whatever that means, and the co-host – of What's Left podcast. Those are her complete credentials as she's presented them to us. And really, I'm supposed to believe her about Elizabeth Warren? No.
Right.
That's why I double-check sources.
And just to make it clear, she pointed to the fact that Josh Delaney, your education policy advisor. So then I went on LinkedIn and I looked up Josh Delaney. I confirmed that he did work in her. And it does show on his LinkedIn profile that he is her senior education policy advisor and that he also worked at Teach for America. And then I had to make the connection from there. So it was just kind of an initial jump off point because I was skeptical at first, right? Because I'm a fan of Warren's policies in terms of, you know, personally, in terms of canceling student debt, in terms of taxing the wealthy, her ultra millionaires tax. I think that's
I think it's great.
And, you know, like I said in the article, to be in favor of a pro-charter school agenda, which is championed by people like the Walton family who own Walmart, they're actually the biggest private funders of charter schools in the country.
Of course.
It just seems very off-brand for someone like Elizabeth Warren, who has kind of fashioned herself as a champion of the working class. And at Grip Post, that's Real News buy-in for the working class. So we pay close attention to her campaign, and that's why the initial things that Amy Therese had pointed out were so startling to me, and then I did my own research, and then that led me to write that article. And also, I would encourage your listeners to read that article a little further because I do go deep into detail about why charters are so problematic for working class people and why they serve to bankrupt public education in America.
Yeah, well, and again, I fully agree. This needs further probing. And I do have a request in for a Elizabeth Warren surrogate. And I will keep everyone posted because I don't let up on those. Look, I have it's a serious concern and questions that need to be answered. I also think Elizabeth Warren is one of those candidates who can be worked with. She's right on just about everything, and maybe she's misguided on this topic, and she just needs the right advisors. Look, and I've said all the time, no candidate is going to be with you or me or anyone else 100%. And even if I were to run for office, in about a week, I'd disagree with myself on something because opinions change and you learn more things and you know, attitudes change. So we have to shoot for the best out there. And I think Elizabeth Warren is one of them, along with Bernie Sanders. And that's why when I see something like this, I want to get to the bottom of it. So,
And I would hope that, and please keep me updated. I would hope that Elizabeth Warren clarifies her stance a little bit. I know she wants to appoint a public school teacher as education secretary, which, you know, in my opinion, is a step in the right direction. Although, you know, it should also be noted that John King, who was President Obama's most recent education secretary, he was also a public school teacher, and charters thrived and expanded under Obama.
Yeah, but Obama was horrible on education, and I'm sorry, his first education secretary, whose name I'm blanking on right now,
Arne Duncan,
was just abysmal, horrible. So I'm certainly not holding Obama up as an example of what we're aspiring to. Just get that out of the way really fast.
Right.
No, I do not want an Obama third term, and I don't want Joe Biden. And my friend Tripp tells me that that's, you know, it's because, you know, he was with Obama, that he's got so much of the, you know, the heart of the African-American community. I'm sorry, I don't think that's good enough. But I'm sorry, you're about to say something?
Oh, yeah, and I was just going to say, like, I think, too, those perceptions could ultimately change after the debates because, you know, you have to remember, at this time of the year, during the 2012 elections, for example, when there were both candidates on the, you know, Democratic and Republican side, obviously President Obama was running for re-election, so, I mean, he was the Democrat's guy. But on the Republican side, at this time of the year, I think Rudy Giuliani was up in the polls by almost 30 points.
Yes.
And then, of course, Fred Thompson was up in the polls for a while. So, I mean, we're still very, very early in the process. For people like you and me who just live and breathe politics all day, I mean, it seems like, oh, my gosh, how's it ever going to change? But, I mean, I think the debates are going to really separate the wheat from the chaff.
And I think, honestly, so too.
You can see Biden's stock drop precipitously. And I think you can see Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris. I think you can see them really start to, you know, rise up as well.
I think so too. But I do want to caution about something. We know what happened in 2016. We know how what Trump calls fake news permeates everything, especially social media. We know that fake news has been around longer than Trump. Of course, it originated with Fox. I have the proof here.
Your original source for fake news. Fox News. We make shit up.
So that's nothing new. But we know that people, especially in election time, put out fake narratives and present them as truth. And here's an example. In the YouTube chat room, we have two chat rooms running during the show, one on the YouTube channel, the other at NicoleSandler.com. And Trudy's asking in YouTube, Nicole, what do you think about Warren vowing to take any money she can get in the general if she's nominated? Like, my question was, where did you hear that? Because I do not believe that. I think that is bullshit that she probably read on Facebook and believed. Have you ever heard anything like this?
Say it again. What did
Trudy said, what do you think about Warren vowing to take any money she can get in the general if she's nominated?
Yeah, I mean, I would have to research that. I mean,
you think?
Like I said, if I have two sources that are confirmed, then I'll read about it. But
right.
Otherwise, it's
I'm guessing Trudy read that from somebody like this Amy Teresa person who makes shit up and posts it on Facebook or Twitter. You need to check, double check, and triple check sources. When you hear something like that, that is obviously bullshit, don't spread the rumors. Don't ask a question like that. Check it out first and see if it's true. Because I'm pretty sure it's not.
This is something I'd love to let your listeners know about. I think correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's Finland. They're actually rolling out, in their effort to fight fake news, they're actually rolling out new curriculum to teach what I believe are public school students about critical thinking, questioning sources, verifying claims, doing research, and teaching that at a young age. And I think that's something I never learned as a kid in the United States. But I think just really encouraging people to be media literate from a young age and to think critically and to question sources and do their own research, so, so important. I will say, like, for us adults, and I don't work for them, obviously, but if you guys wanted to download the NewsGuard app, it's a browser extension, I think Chrome, Firefox. It's free. And basically, whenever you go to the source online, there's a little green check mark or a red X. And news outlets on criteria from do they have they published false claims repeatedly? Do they present facts in a responsible way? Do they do their own interviews? Do they use deceptive headlines? Are they transparent about their ownership? And so it grades news outlets based on those criteria. And it's really helpful for me personally. It just helps me know right off the bat if the outlet I'm reading is legitimate or if it's questionable.
Okay. What is this called? Say it again.
It's called NewsGuard.
NewsGuard.
So if you just Google NewsGuard, their site should come up.
Cool. I'll look at it. And by the way, while you were speaking, I did Google what she said. And here's what I found. I did find something. I guess Elizabeth Warren did an interview with Chris Hayes. This goes back to February 26th. And Hayes says, anyone else gets a nomination, like, just raise all the money you can, however you can. And Warren says, yes, but here's what I want you to see that's different about it, Chris. Think about the difference once we're down to the two candidates. If Democrats have spent the next year in a primary building this thing face-to-face, person-to-person, neighbor-to-neighbor across the country, think of the kind of foundation we've laid down so that when we're really up against it in the general election, it's not just money to fund television ads. It's all the folks who will be doing the door knocking. It's all the folks who will make the phone calls. It's all the all the folks who will reach out to their network, because you know how we're going to win in 2020. It's going to be big. It's going to be people who voted for Donald Trump last time around. It's going to be people who haven't voted at all. It's going to be people who see a vision and a way to make democracy work, not just for the rich and powerful, but make this democracy work for everyone. And she doesn't say that she'll take money from everywhere, but she doesn't deny it either. Okay.
Yeah, and I think it's also important to note that, and just real quick, in March, Elizabeth Warren specifically said she challenges all candidates to commit to grassroots funding only. No funding from billionaires, no funding from PACs. No, you know, $10,000 per plate dinners, like grassroots funding only. And as far as I know, that's been her position since then.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think I don't know. I think this is one of those examples of just something where she was mincing her words instead of just coming out and saying what she meant, because I'm still not clear on it. So that's another question I'll have to add to my list when I do get a Warren surrogate on the show. So I'll stay on top of it, because this is what I do. Carl Gibson, great to reconnect with you. I'm thrilled that I found you at gritpost.com, where you're doing really good work. So thank you for that. People
thank
can
you, Nicole.
Find
appreciate
you
it.
On Twitter as well at CR Gibbs. Carl
right.
Gibson. Thank you again. Good to catch up with you, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Nicole.
Okay, thank you. Bye. All right, and with that, we're done. I'm late, so thanks for listening. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone. I'm going to go try to get some dogs adopted. That's my new volunteer gig. I'm volunteering at the pound because we got to get those rescue dogs rescued. Okay? All right. Have a great weekend. I'll see you Tuesday. Bye, everyone.